Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ask Margot Today. I'm your host, Margot de Coatsworth, and I'm here to answer some of the sticky questions of life. I was talking to my daughter recently about remembering things and our mind's capacity to store information and retrieve it. I've often talked about the vault, referring to my memory, and how top-of-the-mind important things are easy to recall, but there's a vast amount of other information that we don't always recall instantly. My approach to this is to tell people that these things have gone into the vault and can be retrieved, but might take a bit of discovery before they pop up to the surface. I'd like to take that one step further now after this conversation I just had with my daughter. She called it her mind palace, and I absolutely loved that idea. Because if you think about a vault, it's something that's shut up and hidden away, and it doesn't always have a positive connotation. It suggests hard to access. A mind palace, however, sounds absolutely fabulous. It sounds like somewhere glorious where all kinds of treasures are kept. It sounds like a place we all aspire to live in. Someone rules there, and if it's our mind palace, then we are the rulers. We're the ones in our mind palace and on the throne there. And I absolutely love that idea that each of us has a place like this, a place where we rule. So next time you think in despair of what's going on in your mind or where your memory's at, even when you can't articulate something, just tell yourself, relax, you're in charge of your own amazing mind palace. I've always liked the idea of us on the throne, not to lord it over other people, but just to be rulers of our own existence, bosses in our own lives and affairs. I firmly believe we're not designed to be under other people's command or under circumstances outside of ourselves. I don't like to see people who feel they have a right to see another person bend the knee to them. The only time I find that acceptable is a boy petitioning a girl for her hand. Just some food for thought to start our episode today. Our first question is about how to deal with a difficult former wife. I think we are up to the letter S in this episode, so all of our questions will come from people whose radio names today begin with the letter S. So, I was speaking with Sam the other day, and he was at a very tricky stage with his former wife, where he despaired of ever seeing an increase in the quality of their relationship. There's always constant tension, he said, between them, arguments, demands, you name it. And of course, children always feel the impact of that kind of disharmony with their parents. If someone turns out to be selfish, inconsiderate, disrespectful, vicious even, they probably weren't like that in the beginning of the relationship, because why would you fall for someone who was all of those things, and why would you run off and get married to them? I know that things like betrayal cut very deep and leave long-lasting wounds, but in order to create a relationship with the parent of your children, you're going to have to do things differently. I said this to Sam. I said, what about responding completely differently, the opposite way? And he said, yes, now I just say nothing. Well, that's very passive and probably a step in the right direction, but it is passive. And what if you went further and all out, Sam? I suggest you try this. Before you have a meeting or a conversation with your former spouse, send a blessing. Take hold of the energy around this proposed interchange. Send a blessing to her and thank the universe for her. Remind yourself of the qualities that drew you to her in the beginning. Thank her for creating those incredible children you share. Wish her well in your heart. Wish her happiness, peace, harmony for her and for you. You may struggle with this, but that's too bad. Do it anyway. Keep thinking of those good things until your resistance subsides. Then go into that meeting without any anger or fight going on inside you. Smile immediately or give her a pleasant greeting on the phone. Don't argue. You don't have to agree with what she says, but you do have to say, I hear you. I understand that bothers you. I'm sure we can work this out together. You'll find it easier, Sam, to see her point of view if you aren't feeling resistant to begin with. If you don't count her, then there's no fuel for her to get fired up about. This whole thing is about respect and emotional intelligence. I don't usually talk much about emotional intelligence, but perhaps I should, because I see a very low level of it quite often. Anyone who's listening today may have come across this too. If you challenge someone or question them, if their first response is to kick back and say, well, you do that too, or they say, but what about you when you did da-da-da-da-da? You know what I mean? People who can't stay on track and address the thing they're being asked about because they just feel the need to deflect it away from them. That's called a low emotional quotient. God didn't give them that. They did it themselves. If you haven't taken someone on for life and they behave like this, don't pick them, because it means into the future you're going to have to tiptoe around the things that need to be addressed because they can't behave in a mature fashion. I find the best way to deal with a person like this is to say, I've brought up this particular subject, so let's stick to that. And if you have an issue you would like to talk to me about, you may certainly bring that up at some other time on your own initiative. Just pull them back to the point you brought up. Sam, if you are doing battle with your spouse, the chances are that she may be this kind of person who isn't really thinking, how can I behave in this situation that's respectful and in a way that's worthy of the best person I am? A couple of things. Don't have a dig about anything. Only say positive things. Only be kind and respectful and helpful. Try to consider her point of view. Remind yourself that you are coming from a place of harmony and tell her that your aim is for her to be happy and for your relationship to be one of cooperation and harmony. Stick to your guns. Go one step further and say, what can I do to make things work better for you? What can I do that's going to make it work for you as well as me? So she doesn't just think it's all about her. What I'm trying to get you to think about here, Sam, is to change the energetic signature of this relationship. One, by changing what you're projecting before you meet her or before an issue comes up, and changing the way you speak about her. So no longer say, she's a dot, 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 behaving in a very whatever, whatever way. Say nothing negative about her. Just totally zip it. Don't feed that fire of antagonism. Give it no fuel. Put it out with your kindness, consideration, and respect. I know this stuff works, Sam. If you want to see this change, you have to throw yourself into this wholeheartedly, because this is where the power is, and you hold the power to turn that situation around. Let me know how you go. Our second question today is about chronic illness, and is that really too hard to change? I know that when people are faced with very established serious illnesses, and I talk about perfect health, it's quite a challenge for people to aspire to that, because you feel so deeply entrenched in anything but perfect health. So I want to talk about that today. I rarely talk about health conditions, but I do talk about the principles around health, because principles govern everything, whether the condition is great or small. The first thing is your expectation. Do you feel improvement is a possibility for you, or do you feel further decline is inevitable? If you feel it's inevitable and you accept that there's not much that can be done, I really can't offer you anything. But if you hope or would like to believe that this is not written in stone, that's great. Your expectation is all. Look within yourself and see where you stand on that, and make sure that wherever you are now, that you're looking up and forward and not down and backward at what's been. Because, or even, sorry, and try not to see what's been spoken of you as being absolute. So that's your expectation. The next thing, and this is so important, and we're so terrible at it, is how are you speaking about what's going on in your body? What's the story you're telling? And what are you saying? Are you saying, this is what I've got, this is how it is? Are you saying, I've got this, I've had it for ages, and there's no way it's going to change? It can only get worse. This is all about how you identify yourself. Do you see yourself as owning this condition? Do you say, my whatever it is? I don't care who you are or what's wrong with you, you must never say my to anything you don't want. My cancer, my terminal illness. Why would you own something you don't want? Do not allow the condition to be your identifier. It's a simple thing you can change by no longer using that word my in front of it. Then your genie, your subconscious mind, your body and the universe doesn't hear it coming out of you. Change the orders you are giving. This is not easy work. This is a challenge of the most profound kind for us to say, I will no longer align myself with something I don't want. I know it's a big leap to go from something dire to something you might see as perfect health, but you can steer yourself by degrees into a new direction. It's a bit like a truck that doesn't turn in an instant, especially if it's a vehicle that has weight and momentum. You can turn it around, but you can only do it by degrees, by careful management. You don't need to have a revelation about this, you just need to decide. Make an intention for yourself, and whenever you feel it, a twinge or pain, or you feel challenged, whenever you feel down, whenever you feel overwhelmed, just say, every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. I know that when we're sick, we kind of check out mentally sometimes because we don't have the energy or the inspiration or the capacity to be chirpy or even positive. That's when discipline has to step in. Make a recording for yourself if you haven't got the energy. Use a voice memo. I do this on my phone and I record powerful declarations and I play them when I wake up in the morning, when I go to sleep at night. If you haven't got the energy to verbalize it in the moment, then you play a recording, one that says you're already living the life you want. In this case, a life of taking back the ground of your health. And in every way and every day, getting better and better. If anyone's listening to this and would like some help, you're welcome to email me under the contact tab at Margo Unlimited and I'll send you an audio recording that you can play to yourself whenever you need it. Our next question is about how to keep a man. Sue wrote in and said she needed help quickly to keep a man interested in her and to stay in her life. Well, Sue, my first response might be a little bit dismissive, like just walk him to the door and shut the door after him, because you deserve someone who not only wants to be with you, but will leap tall buildings and slay dragons to do that. Then I came across a wise woman I follow, actually, and she said this: being pretty doesn't keep a man. Being honest doesn't keep a man. Being loyal doesn't keep a man. Being there for a man doesn't keep a man. Treating a man well doesn't keep a man. Making an effort, caring for a man, spending time with him doesn't keep a man. You can have the best intentions, you can have the most sincere feelings, you can be a good woman, but that won't keep a man. You can't force a man to be with you. You can't make a man stay with you. You can't make him love you. A man who wants to be kept when the relationship gets hard will do everything to fight for you. Because the only way to keep a man is if that man wants to be kept by you. A man only fights for a girl he wants to be with. That's the hard truth, ladies. So says this woman. Now, I know that life is not always black and white, and we're all different people with different levels of acceptability and different expectations of life. And I've often thought a relationship is kind of like a wave. Sometimes one person loves another, and sometimes it feels like the other one loves that person more. Sometimes people get such a fix on someone that they will do whatever is necessary to keep that person. But that doesn't feel very balanced or very desirable. I'm afraid I'm with the wise woman. I just quoted Sue. Even if you manage to capture this man's attention and commitment for a while, if the substance of it isn't there for him, what kind of future does that suggest? Let's go a bit further and look at this energetically. Sue, when you say you need help quickly to keep a man, think about that, because that suggests that your power is in clinging to somebody, but it's not. Your power lies in the story you are telling yourself about who you are and what kind of love you want. If you hold the thought, I have to keep him, then you're already living in the fear that he could leave. That fear is what you end up radiating. It's not magnetic in a way that you want. Instead, shift the story. See yourself as the woman who is cherished, who's wanted, who's adored, not just by that man, but by the man who's truly right for you. Close your eyes and imagine it now, you and the man who delights in being with you. From that place, your words, your actions, even the way you walk into a room all change. You stop asking, how do I keep him? And you begin living as though, of course, the man who loves me is here. Of course, I'm secure and certain in that love. And here's the key. If this man is right for you, he'll meet you in that story. And if he's not, your new story makes way for the man who is right. So don't fight to keep anyone. Instead, live as the woman who is already loved and kept. And watch the right man take his place beside you. Our next question is about making money. It's from Sean, and he came up recently to me in a group, and we were talking about how one can successfully make money, and all kinds of suggestions flew around the group from people about putting the work in and the long hours and having good funding and all kinds of practical ways that people end up being successful in their quest to make money. Now, I understand all of that, and I often say to people, if you've got a good idea, you must first look at the figures to see if it's viable and will make you more than just a living. But recently, I was listening to what is an AI version of a woman who's departed this life now. Her name, I've mentioned her before, is Florence Scovel Shinn. And she has a very interesting take on this, which I agree with. I was listening to her opinions on this subject, so I wanted to read this to you. It's taken from a metaphysical point of view about health and success, and that means money, I guess. And I found that what she is saying must be so powerful that I thought you would benefit from hearing this as well. It's apparently the real formula for making money. It's quite poetic, it's quite biblical, and it's quite uncompromising. You may find it confronting, but I find it really worth considering. Plenty of people will tell you about the practical methods of making money. There are zillions of them all over the internet. This is what I call the energetic approach. It's deeper and more fundamental. And actually, it's where all change happens, because everything begins first with thought. Here we go then. You are not meant to worship money, but you are meant to command it. You are not called to chase wealth, but to speak it, to call it, to receive it as the natural extension of your alignment with divine order. So you must now look honestly at the emotional hooks that have kept you loyal to struggle. Have you feared judgment? Have you feared separation from those who call wealth evil? Have you feared your own power? It's time to unplug from that matrix. It's time to break that inner agreement. And how do you do it? By repetition, by rhythm, by speaking the new word until it vibrates through every cell in your body and overrides the old programming. Until you can imagine yourself already wealthy, peaceful, radiant, and until you feel no guilt, no shame, and no resistance. Say it until it becomes your new peace, your new identity. God is my unfailing supply, and large sums of money come to me now under grace in perfect ways. That's not just a sentence. It's a sword that severs you, listen to this everybody, from the bondage of generational scarcity. I think that's quite important. Most people are lumbered with that. It's a ladder out of the pit of inherited shame and the thunder that cracks the illusion and opens the heavens to your good. Before there is form, there is word. Before there is manifestation, there is declaration. Before the money shows up, the blessing is spoken. That's how creation has always worked, she says. God did not move the world with his hands. He said, let there be light. He spoke the heavens, the waters, the earth, the seed-bearing trees, the beasts of the field, and man himself into form with his word. It all came forth from the divine voice. And that same power has been placed within you because you were made in the image and likeness of God. Not to observe, but to declare. Not to describe what is, but to call forth what shall be. And if you've been waiting for proof before speaking, you've been hesitating until the money appears, the opportunity arrives, or the numbers add up, then you're not living by spiritual law. You are still worshipping appearances. You're still bowing before evidence instead of authority. But I tell you now, authority is granted to the one who speaks from the unseen authority. She says, you must speak it before you see it. You must say it before you feel safe. You must declare it before you know how it will come. Because speech is not a response, it's a command. It's the cause, not the effect. It's the origin of change, not the confirmation of it. The tongue is not just a tool of expression, it's a divine lever of transformation. And if you would become a master of substance, a demonstrator of divine wealth, a channel for infinite supply, then you must begin not by asking, not by hoping, not by doubting, but by saying. You must begin with the word and never stop saying it. This is the law of expectancy, a spiritual law rooted not in wishful thinking or passive hoping, but in the absolute knowing that what is spoken in faith must appear by divine law. It is written into the fabric of consciousness itself. Now, if that's kind of new to you, it's quite full on, I agree. But I find it thrilling, and it makes me want to pick up my game and remember that we are the ones who are supposed to be wielding the power. We are the genie in our lives. My platform has always been the transformational power of the words we use. But now I'm thinking even greater than that, about the possibility that we have actual power of command with our chosen words. I'm exploring this at the moment. In the next episode, I'll tell you about how I've been using this principle in my life. If you have any questions, please do write in to us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margounlimited.com, Margo with a T. We love to hear from you. Thank you for your fine company today. I was going to say divine company, but that's actually true as well. To finish, here is the word, our message from the universe. There is a balance, yes, but you must learn to discern your emotions and follow the thin thread that leads you to the place you have been desiring. If you do not feel good about something and what to do about it is not immediately clear to you, ask and listen. and watch for the answer. You may be sure it will be there for you. The answer is always there for you. Thank you so much for being with me today. I look forward to seeing you next time. Don't forget you can listen to more of these episodes and other fantastic sessions from Coast Access on Apple and Spotify podcasts. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.